News Talk Breakfast.
In association with AIR. Do anything, anywhere with high-speed 4G mobile data coverage across 96% of the population.
This is News Talk.
Over the next coming few weeks here on News Talk Breakfast, we're going to be looking at the issue of violence against women here in Ireland. We're going to be hearing from the survivors of violence, the support groups and academics, as we examine the causes and effects of this very, very worrying phenomenon. In the first of our series, we're asking, are these cases on the rise, or is it that people now feel more comfortable about coming forward and reporting the fact that they've been victims of this type of violence? Earlier, I spoke to Dr. Louise Crowley. She's a senior lecturer in law at UCC. Now, I began by asking her why there is a perception abroad that these crimes are becoming more prevalent.
Undoubtedly, it's become very much highlighted in the media and socially in recent years, and particularly, unfortunately, in recent weeks and months. It's become an issue that has become very topical for all the wrong reasons. And we had a very high-profile number of cases in the last number of weeks where women have been attacked, both in the context of intimate private relationships and also in a stranger context. And what this has done is that it has once again raised the very challenging and complex issue of not just domestic violence with a home situation, but broader intimate violence where parties who are known to each other, where very typically the woman has been very violently abused or unfortunately murdered in certain instances recently. Whether that is an indicator that it is a growing problem, it's very difficult to be sure. Certainly it is more high profile, but I get the sense that this is an issue that has been a long-term issue for us, but it seems to be coming, we've become more aware as a society. Certainly it's being discussed more in the media. There's an element of destigmatizing. People are no longer ashamed to stand up and admit that they are being abused and seek help, which is a positive thing on one level, albeit it does reflect this awful problem that we have in society. But I think the law has become broader. We have more remedies available to more people. It's no longer limited to certain sectors of what might be regarded as a deserving victim who can be supported. And also, I think the conversation has broadened right through society. It's happening in universities. It's happening socially. And perhaps that the law and the data is starting to be collected now in relation to the prevalence. And so I think it's a long-standing problem. I think the nature of the abuse seems to be becoming more horrific. But that, again, is very difficult to be confident about in terms of being sure, because we do lack data on the prevalence and the experience of victims of domestic violence broadly in Ireland. And we are behind the trends internationally as regards collecting that data and getting a real sense of the extent of the problem in Ireland.
Now, there is an issue there. We have changed the laws. One of the big problems we've had always in criminologically in Ireland is that we've had a paucity of research data, but that has been attempted. There is an attempt being made to rectify that in recent years. The 2005 report entitled Domestic Abuse of Women and Men in Ireland, which was produced for DSRI, found that 1 in 7 women in Ireland compared to 1 in 17 men experience severe abusive behaviour. There's an international research in 2001 reported that 90% of the most systemic, persistent and injurious violence that is instrumental in the maintenance of power is perpetrated by men. In UK, USA and Canada, another cross-jurisdictional study reported that between 90 and 97% of perpetrators of relationship violence are men. The Women's Aid here in Ireland have repeatedly reported that 1 in 5 women, 20% of women in Ireland who have been in a relationship, have been abused by a current or former partner. Is it that since we changed the laws here in recent times, in the past 20 years, Louise, that we have seen the reportage of this kind of crime increasing?
It may have increased slightly. It is still suggested that, you know, no more than 10 to 14% of victims of domestic violence are reporting. And so whilst we have this data, it is just a tiny snapshot of what's happening. As you mentioned, the domestic reports, which are crucial to how we react, how we develop our policies and our laws, are in response to what is happening on the ground. And as you mentioned, we have the 2005 ESRI report and the very important seminal report of 2002, which is the Savvy report, the Sexual Abuse and Violence in Ireland report. We've nothing substantial since then, but the good news is a new Savvy 2 report has just been commissioned by the government and the terms of reference has been put together. So, you know, the good news is that we are about to carry out, because it's been commissioned, a nationwide survey of the experiences, both in terms of violence and also the state reactions regarding investment, laws, policies, support services for people who are victims of domestic and relationship violence in Ireland. So we are starting, we have come to realise finally and put the investment in it to understand the extent of the problem in Ireland. And only when we properly grasp the prevalence and what is on the ground for victims of domestic violence, and indeed how we respond to perpetrators of domestic and relationship violence, can we make sure that our law has the capacity and our support services have the capacity to support people. So we are at the start of sort of a new beginning whereby we're going to get the data. And as I said, we are behind internationally, where huge work has been done to understand the prevalence. And unfortunately, Paul, the international data that has emerged is horrific. You know, there's a very recent 2014 EU study, you know, which talks about how young the victims are when violence begins and the prevalence of it. You know, that so many women, and it is almost always women, but not entirely, who are victims of domestic violence. And it is a scourge in society, absolutely internationally. And so I'm delighted that we have the Savvy 2 report about to be commissioned. And also we have, you know, responses from the Gardaí. There's a new 2017 policy has been issued, and I've met with Gardaí, and it is a hugely comprehensive policy that seeks to properly record offences, to have risk assessments done, because women are most vulnerable with repeat offences. And so if we can react as first responders and we get our policies and our first responders properly educated and informed and trained, and we properly educate the judiciary and we have appropriate laws and adequately invested support services for all constituents and all parties involved, you know, maybe we can properly react finally.
Okay, the Gardaí will tell you, anecdotally, and certainly I've interviewed a huge number of women who were involved in these kind of situations, were abused, and I was one of the first male journalists in the late 80s to interview the women in the so-called Battered Wives Centre, which was a horrific name for for a place. But what guards will tell you is that they will go to a domestic, and the vast majority of police, the statistics do show that internationally, the vast majority of police business is dealing with domestic violence incidents. But when they go to a domestic, as they call them, and the wife has been beaten or whatever, and they try, the guard says, look, will you press charges? And the person agrees to press charges, the victim. But then inevitably, they say, in a large large cohort of those cases, the spouse will inevitably, and they will predictably, withdraw their complaint. Is there anything we can do about that?
There are a number of things we can do, Paul, I suppose. So there, it's, as you know, it's hugely complex. So in the first instance, and a guard would speak better to this than I would, but their 2017 policy is educating the guards about how to react to those situations, how to speak to the victim and explain the process involved so that they can get the statement from if possible, if the person is willing to make a statement. And it's about that follow-up process. It's about reaching out to support services and giving that woman the courage or the tools or the capacity to follow up. There's also about where does that woman go if she makes a statement. I mean, we know that a woman is most vulnerable in that scenario where she tries to leave. So has she somewhere to go? That's about investing in support.
But we don't have that infrastructure now, though.
Exactly.
We've never had that infrastructure in the 30 years I'm doing crime.
No, we don't. We absolutely don't. And that's where investment is key. You know, we can get all the data we want in the world. We can find out exactly what's going on the ground. But unless we have the tools to respond, we simply can't help that woman. And another important factor is that, as you know, marriage is no longer, you know, sacrosanct in Ireland. Not everybody is getting married. And up until 1996, unless you were a married victim of domestic violence, you simply had no remedy in law. In the new 2017 Act, for the first time, and our hand has been forced by the Council of Europe on this, any person in a relationship where they are in danger from their partner, they now have the power to seek a remedy, to have that abuser removed from the home, even where that victim has no proprietary interest in the home. So we now have the capacity for that woman to be protected for 8 days and remove that abuser, irrespective of his ownership of the property. Mm. And this, for the first time in Irish law, prioritises the vulnerable needs, the needs of the vulnerable party, over what, up until this year, a couple of weeks ago, was the property rights were more important than protecting that woman and any children that might be involved. So we're finally valuing the crime, which it's not a crime, but the act of domestic violence or relationship violence. Mm. And I think this actually is a sea change in Ireland, that we're finally moving away from this notion, firstly, that only a married person should be protected, and secondly, this notion that the man's property rights were more important than the needs of the victim of domestic violence. And this is part of the picture that's changing. So whilst we have far from a sufficient infrastructure in place in terms of support, I do think we're finally moving towards it. But the key thing is we need investment. We need this to be important enough for the state to provide funds for the likes of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, for Cúinlí in Cork, for all the different women's aid services that are there, and to protect these victims of domestic violence in a very real way. You know, the law is
There is also a new area which is equally important: emotional abuse. Briefly explain to us what that entails legally.
Yeah, legally. So for the first time, the new Act has introduced the crime of coercion. And what coercion is it's an offence, it's a criminal offence, which is hugely significant because it means there's a power of arrest. And the offence of coercion is where an abuser exercises controlling or coercive behaviour that is deemed to have harm or a serious effect on the victim. And what it means is that it puts that victim in fear of violence. You don't need the broken arm or the broken leg. If you can provide evidence that you're in fear of violence or that person's behaviour is causing serious alarm or distress to your
But I was going to say, but the whole issue there in terms of proof beyond all reasonable doubt, somebody gets into a spouse's head and literally wrecks their head and completely undermines them, makes them feel that they're worthless, and then they lose their confidence, and then they can be manipulated, but never lays a finger on them. How do you prove that?
Well, this is very difficult, and there's a lot of international research on the challenges, because in theory it sounds great. You know, you've been emotionally abused, financially abused, you tell the judge, and that person will be arrested for a criminal offence. So what it does, in the positive sense, is that it recognises the complexity of relationship abuse, that it's not just about the physical injury. Obviously, a person who has been so treated is going to be a very vulnerable witness. It's going to find it very hard to stand up and say, he did this, he said this, he did the other thing. So there's undoubtedly challenges there. But I suppose in terms of a principle or a recognition of the complexity, it's hugely welcome. There are question marks over the reality of the capacity to prove it, the strength that we would need to prove it. But I do think it gives the victim, another small tool to assert themselves if possible.
Okay.
And I mean, it would require support. It would require support for that person giving the evidence. And of course, there's always will they be believed, the burden of proof, the thresholds that must be proven to secure any conviction in that. And I suppose just in that context, if I may, and that's where the training of the judiciary is very important. And another new part of the 2017 Act that's been introduced is that for the first time, the courts are required to give an explanation. The judge must give a reason why he or she doesn't grant an order that's sought by a victim of domestic violence. And so historically, the capacity to secure a barring order has been very low. In 2015, only 33% of barring orders sought were successful, 50% in 2016. And we have no idea why those orders aren't being granted. The judges don't have to give a reason. That now has been introduced. So we're hoping that there'll be a bit of clarity as to what you must prove, what evidence the court require, what is sufficient to bar an abuser from the home. So again, they might sound challenging. There's still difficulties for the victim. But when you piece all those developments together, we're hoping that we're moving towards a more sort of credible and workable system where all the different people involved in making decisions, making orders, supporting victims will be more learned, more experienced, and more capable of supporting victims of domestic violence.
Now, Louise, very finally, I want to ask you this question. Yeah. There is a perception abroad about this, so I just wanted to see what you think about it.
Okay.
There are aspects of modernity, or the late modernity that we are now living in, specific aspects like the digital age. You were talking about younger profile of younger victims and offenders. This EU research was completed there. I'm just wondering how much the prevalence of porn, for example, and the easy, absolutely easy access that young men have to it.
Yeah.
Is there also then an argument, or there is a discussion around the fact that men are increasingly feeling more emasculated as women become more independent, more assertive? Are these reasons for concern as we exist now going forward, that these are triggers for an increase in appalling domestic violence?
Yeah, I mean, isn't it a terrible thing to say that, women becoming stronger is causing men to become more violent? And certainly the answer isn't, women not becoming stronger. I think it's about how we manage, if we can manage, accessibility to, all this technology and all the very negative elements attaching to the technology. Certainly, again, I suppose as a lawyer, I would talk to you about how the new Act gives the court powers to make orders in relation to the use of technology when somebody is convicted. You cannot contact the person through social media, etc. That's a separate issue, I suppose, with technology. As regards the technology and the access to porn and being a trigger, I suppose access to porn has always been a trigger. Access to alcohol being a trigger. How do we control that? Because you have the issues of, you know, privacy and autonomy versus protecting vulnerable people. And very often we can only react to incidents as opposed to prevent them. So short of preventing access to technology and to online resources, it's a very difficult area for the law to engage with and to act as preventative before a measure. Certainly when someone's been convicted, we're very much in a position to impose restrictions on them. And I suppose an important issue that sometimes isn't looked at, in my opinion, sufficiently is how we deal with perpetrators. So perpetrators, you know, if we're talking about men almost always, but not entirely being the perpetrators, we must also recognise that most perpetrators, it's a very small number of men in society, but those perpetrators are repeat perpetrators typically. So I think crucial argument in this whole complex discussion is how we provide interventions for perpetrators. So if somebody is convicted or is on the radar as an abuser, we need to get to that person. And if there's any capacity for that person to receive treatment, to be required to engage in a perpetrator program, well, if we can even affect and improve the behavior or percentage of perpetrators, well, what we're doing is we're nubbing out the source. And there's some international research, I don't have any domestic research, but there was research conducted in the US in the late 1990s, which showed that women very often take back abusive partners. We know that domestically because you see repeat applications for intervention by the same women very often. And so women are taking these men back because they love them, they just desperately want them to be nicer people. And so if we can force people convicted of domestic or relationship offences to engage with perpetrator programs, whether it's within prison when they're incarcerated, with the probation services, or as in Caledonia and Scotland, and in Australia, where they've done great work on this, there's a mandatory requirement to engage in perpetrator programs. Well, there are perpetrators who have the capacity to change, and I think that's a key part of the puzzle. If we can,
but it sounds like it's a lot of it is down to money, as in we need to set up this infrastructure.
Yeah,
you do need a physical building, you need all kinds of security,
and
you need trained people.
Yeah. But it's happening on the ground. We have movements in Ireland, we have organisations who work with perpetrators, and I've done research and workshops with perpetrators who want to change. The men that I've met who, to be fair, were on the end of the spectrum, who knew their behaviour was wrong and wanted to change, but it was fascinating to meet with them and to grow to understand that they desperately wanted to change, and they worked together in a kind of a peer support.
And by the way, you believe them, because I've met lots of paedophiles through the years as well, and they will always, inevitably a paedophile will always have a conversation with you whereby they accept that what they did was appalling and awful. The longer you talk to them, after about 10, 15 minutes, they never failed to do this, and I'm talking about a lot of them I've met, they tend to then backwardly start rationalising their behaviour.
Oh, I know. And I mean, it's very
And it's the same for domestic violence, perpetrators of domestic violence that I've met anyway, that they will try and rationalise. If you talk to them long enough, they will turn around and say to you, but now she got wrecked my head.
Well, you know, the perpetrators are the perpetrators. Let's be very clear on that. These are the people who are committing these awful offences. But I do think that if you give up on all perpetrators and you say, well, they're a perpetrator and that's the end of it, but what you're doing is you're not addressing a source. And there are many perpetrators who are not for changing. But I do believe that we have to invest in that area. We can't ignore it. And I think that obviously, the main investment has to go for support for victims. You know, absolutely, that's a given. But I think that if we're going to truly invest in the totality of the complexities, we have to also force perpetrators to face up what happens, whether they'll change their behaviour or not. That's out of my control and your control. But there are skill sets out there that can work with perpetrators. And if it only changed the mindset of a small number, well, the victims of that small number will benefit, and their children may be less vulnerable. And I think that it has to be looked at and it has to also be invested in.
Okay, Dr. Louise Crowley, it's certainly an extremely complex and challenging area, but it needs action, and it needs it now. Senior lecturer in law at UCC, Dr. Louise Crowley. Thank you very, very much for joining us.
If you or anyone you know find yourself the victim of domestic violence, find yourself in that kind of a situation, there is help. Remember, there is help out there, and you don't have to put up with this, and there is support and assistance for you. So as always, the Women's Aid, the 24-hour national free phone helpline, is always there, and it's 1800 341 900. That's 1800 341 900.